I'm Gab, he's Jules. Grey and horrid skies over West London. Jules, match day 6 of the Champions League.
That's it.
I wish I would say there was a ton going on. There isn't a ton because a lot of things are decided. Not decided. Paris Saint-Germain scraping through. Well done, well earned. Barcelona losing, but Xavi didn't really need. Not that it mattered because they're still going through. But, and I apologize to everybody who doesn't like hearing talk of Manchester United, but they leave us no choice.
No choice.
They're out. And we knew it was likely to happen, and it was beyond their control, ultimately, because, obviously, Copenhagen beat Galatasaray. But I think we have to talk fallout. We have to talk the way this game happened. There's this incredible stat that we talked about before, 12 defeats in 24 games this season for Erik ten Hag. I said on Monday that what I want to see is progress more than performance. It was likely they were going out. It's likely they'll lose to Liverpool. They may lose to West Ham too. I know people say, oh, it's a results business. If you say it's a results business, you're kind of a moron because it's one of those like easy, yes, obviously. But you want to see performance because that shows you that you're going to move towards results.
Yeah.
Did you see a performance? Did you see a reaction from them?
What I saw, Gab, is that they had to win the game to stand a chance of qualifying. And I know it's Bayern, already qualified, already top of the group, but you have to win to stay alive in this group, to hope that there's a draw between Copenhagen and Galatasaray and that you're actually going to go through, right? One shot on target in 95 minutes or 96 minutes.
I blame Varane.
One shot on target. How do you expect to win the game when clearly I understand in a way that Ten Hag wanted more solidity, because if you start the game and you 2-0 down after 15 minutes, then it's even more of a disaster. But you have to win the game. You cannot play just not to lose it, because you actually have to win. How can you have one shot on target, a Luke Shaw shot from outside of the box, and that's it? Nothing else?
And I think one other thing to add to this, which I think puts it in context. I was surprised. I mean, Tuchel said he would play his strongest team, and he did. Bayern Munich, of course, is short of first place. I think, obviously, he wanted to see some sort of reaction. They have another big game coming up at the weekend against Stuttgart. He wanted to see some redemption, maybe, after they were beaten 5-1 by Eintracht. I wouldn't have done it. I would have played the kids. I would have played people like Alphonso Davies
on
yellow.
But
it's important to play. Yeah, so you're playing their best 11, right? I think except for Choupo-Moting, who's replaced by Jamal Musiala. But equally, this 11 out there, yeah, they want to play, they want to execute, but they also don't want to get injured.
Exactly.
They also 50%. Thinking ahead to Stuttgart, which is much more important to them.
Exactly.
So in some ways, it's almost like if he'd played a second 11, he would have been facing all these angry, super motivated Matthijs Tel and Kratzig and Pavlovic types. Instead, he plays these guys who are kind of like, eh. And I think that makes it more disappointing.
Yeah, also. And I mean, imagine if there'd been a draw between Copenhagen and Galatasaray. I think United fans would have rather to lose against Bayern Munich at home, but at least give it a go. Not what we saw, I'm sorry, not what we saw on Tuesday. That was just not good enough. And to have 5 shots in a game like that, only one on target. And yeah, they didn't give much to Bayern, and Bayern scored that lovely goal by Coman, great assist by Kane. But apart from that, they had some chances, but you could see that United were structured defensively. That's not what was needed on that day. What they needed is a goal. And there was no Martial, no Rashford. So again, we go back to injuries. You lose Shaw and Maguire.
How did Martial get injured from one game to the next?
No, he was ill. He was ill.
And he was ill. Rashford was ill too. Obviously, when somebody in that situation, especially Rashford, gets ill, and I think this is comms matter, right? Because as far as I know, all we have is United telling us that Rashford's not selected because he's ill. I think it's important your messaging and quashing rumors. If he really is ill, I think you need to come across more convincing that Rashford is ill.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea what tell us what he has or whatever. No, because I have no reason to believe he's not ill. But given what happened before, you need to think about these things. And there's a sense of drift, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's not just Ten Hag and the results, it's also the uncertainty still over the ownership situation, which has not been completed yet. It's been agreed, but it hasn't been rubber stamped. And I think that's the only point at which you go forward. Although already there's stories out there. There's stories that Julian Lopetegui is the top choice. There's stories that Ratcliffe has met with Graham Potter.
Yeah.
In one sentence, do either of those two excite you?
No, I mean, like I said on the website, like we wrote on the website together, I would keep Ten Hag a little bit, but I think if Ratcliffe is starting already to talk to other managers, doesn't smell good for him at all.
No, it does not look good, and of course, maybe he just wants to know what his options are.
So I don't know how United fans would feel about Graham Potter coming after what happened at Chelsea, etc. Just something important, I think, in the background of this Ratcliffe meeting Potter story. They've met before because Ratcliffe tried to bring Potter to Nice. So it's not just like, hey, hi, Graham, this is Jim Ratcliffe. You know, I fancy you as a United manager. They have history. They have been in contact a lot in the last 6 to 10 months, really. So I don't know what they talked about. Maybe they talked about United. Maybe Ratcliffe really wants him at United. But they've met before. They interviewed him for the Nice job. They had a long chat. They spent a lot of time together. So, and that probably would help Graham Potter if he was a race between him and Lopetegui or somebody else. So that's all I want to say, because maybe United fans didn't know that detail.
Yeah, I think it's important to put that in context. As far as Lopetegui is concerned, I like Lopetegui as a manager, but he comes with the baggage of George Mendes. And again, and then this is, I think, is a good transition. When people, you know, we had the question on our Champions League talking points on the website, oh, is it time to move on from Ten Hag? I think, and my saying is, no, you can't move on from Ten Hag until your house is in order.
Yeah, that's right.
Because the most important thing is who is going to decide who Ten Hag's replacement is if you move on from him. In a normal club, in normal circumstances, best practice, I think, is you have a director of football who does that in accordance with the chief executive and the owner, or owners in this case, right?
Yeah.
Of these kind of four elements, right, you have, right now, you've got Joel and Avram in place representing the Glazers. We don't have Sir Jim in yet, not officially. I mean, it's going to happen, but, you know, it's not done. It's not dusted. Nope. We don't have a chief executive. We have Richard Arnold, who's on his way out.
Yeah.
And we have a director of football who, like, we both know people who know John Murta really well. I don't know him personally, right? But they say he's a good guy. He's got an eye for a player, whatever else. It's one of two things. Either he is really competent at his job and does have a good eye for a player, but did not feel empowered to operate as a director of football, stroke sporting director, because, for whatever reason, because there's a tradition at United of backing the manager first, and it's kind of a personal thing.
Yeah, Ten Hag's in charge, clearly.
Okay. Or he's not good at it. Or he has been involved. Right? Or maybe a bit of both. My first question, if I'm Murta, is what is my future at the club, and will I be empowered to do things? Because if I'm not, then you need to then bring in a director of football, which I would imagine might be something they might want to do. You have to do all those things.
We know that it's going to happen, right? As soon as Sir Jim Ratcliffe is in, he's going to bring, I think he already has the sporting director, whether it's Paul Mitchell, Paolo Maldini, Dougie Friedman, whoever the other, because they would have received a lot of calls from people wanting that job, trust me. I'm not saying neither of those three are better than, but I'm just saying there are three names that are in contention.
Then, for that reason, until that all gets done and sealed and you can calmly evaluate the situation, you don't make a change.
No, I agree.
You don't make a change now when, you know, I think they have something like, well, they've got these two games before Christmas, right? Then you can't have this kind of knee jerk and come in.
But they would not sack him in now anyway. They would not sack him until Jim Ratcliffe comes to the club. So that might be after the new year now, potentially. They won't do that. Nobody's in charge now anyway to do that, like you said, because it's such a mess again. So they would not do that now. The thing about Ten Hag, really, the more I watch them play, the more I see him. After the game on Tuesday, it's the flash interview, so I know it's not easy because you've just come off the pitch, you're disappointed, you finished fourth. Fourth in a group with Copenhagen and Galatasaray is a disgrace for a club like that. It's an absolute disgrace. And yet, what does he say? It was a very good performance. A very good performance, he said. That's his words. He said on TNT, that was a very good performance. One shot on target, you lost 1-0. You've won one game. Yeah. One game in a group like this. And it's a very good performance.
This is another area where I think he needs help with his messaging.
But
right?
We've said he's in denial all season. We've said it.
I don't know if he's in denial, right? I do know that when we in the media go and shove cameras in front of you, you know, especially, as you said, in a flash interview context, the way you come across really, really matters, right? Sometimes it's tough. Sometimes you want to be you want to be honest. You always want to be accountable if you're the manager. I think in every game. This is not what anybody wants to hear, that it was a good performance, right? Or at least you say that, look, we're super disappointed. We're out of here. We feel like we've let everybody down because we should have qualified from this group. I saw some positive things, but it doesn't matter because we're out of the group. And what matters is we want to build on them, and I want to show that against Liverpool, and we're going to work hard to show it against Liverpool.
His messages are wrong.
But something like that makes more sense than coming out and talking about a good performance when you have one shot on target.
He has taken progress for granted. Last season was a good season for United. Top four, a trophy, the League Cup. I think he thought, well, everybody said this is the impossible job. Look, first season I arrive. Old Trafford was a fortress. Didn't they win like they didn't lose for like 34 games in a row at home or something like that? Correct. Ridiculous. And I swear, if he would have felt like this second season, we're going to continue our progress, we're going to do this. He's been hit by injuries, to be fair, that it's not in his control to lose so many players. And again, Shaw and Maguire have time against Bayern Munich. But this problem that he brought onto himself, like the Sancho argument, whatever is happening with Rashford, all of that, you know, and you could argue that the way he's dealt with those issues have been wrong, calling out players publicly, banning journalists from press, all that kind of stuff. But I really think that he took the progress after the first season onto the second season for granted, thinking like, yeah, we're going to keep going up. And it hasn't happened like that. And I really think that at some point he's taken his eye off the ball. And what backs my point up is I think all those post-match press conference or interviews that we've debriefed all this season where he said, it's never his fault. Never his fault. And it's always a good performance. Oh, they lose Arsenal. Oh, we played great. We deserve to win. No, you didn't. And loads of things like that.
I had lunch with somebody in football the other week, and he said, talking about United, he said, if you notice, since Sir Alex left, the vast majority of the players who have arrived do worse at United than they did when they were before.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when they leave, unless they're old, they do better somewhere else. And I thought about it, and look, this is a game you can play at home, United fans. I'm sure it's not true of everybody. I'm sure there's counterexamples who, you know, maybe they do well and then they stink at Old Trafford and they stink afterwards or whatever. But it does really speak to a certain kind of dysfunction. Now, if Ten Hag were with us, he would mention, and you know, you mentioned this, but just to recap, because I think it is part of the conversation. Obviously, Lisandro Martinez has been out all season.
Yeah.
Lindelof was, you should say it's just Lindelof, but he would have played. Also out. Varane, you pull him back in after dropping him, which I think psychologically isn't the easiest thing to do. Obviously, you mentioned Maguire and Shaw, the injuries. No Casemiro, no Mason Mount.
Yeah, Malasia.
Okay, fine. Yeah, no Jurel Malasia and Anthony Martial.
He's better than Reguilón at left back or better than Dalot at left back.
No, he's not. Malasia, no. No, I will take Dalot over Malasia any day of the week. No, sorry.
Definitely not.
All right, we'll just agree to this.
Yeah.
No Martial, who, as you know, I think is wasted his shirt. But
I do know.
So these are his mitigating circumstances, but you still imagine in those conditions, you know, even Bruno, right? Who I expect Bruno to be United's best or second best player every time he plays, more because of the people around him. You know, you're suspended at the weekend. This is your shot, and you know, when you said one shot on target, I don't know how many shots he took in the game, but I expect more from him.
So, to his defense, and I agree with your point, he played deeper than Scott McTominay in this game. So again, and I don't want to go on and on about Ten Hag and his tactics, and we've destroyed him on this show many times before. But I go back to this point where you need to win this game. Who is your most creative player?
Bruno. Well, sorry. No, the most creative players is actually Antony, who I'm assuming if he were doing papier-mâché paper dolls or something, would be much more impressive than Bruno. If you're talking as a footballer, it's Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah. So how come in a must-win game, again, I'm going to repeat it, Scott McTominay is the highest player on the pitch, certainly compared to Bruno Fernandes, behind Holland.
So it's a good question. I picked up on that too. I didn't actually know that his average position was higher than Bruno Fernandes. But
most of the time. I don't know if it was in the end, the heat map is... But
I think it had to do with the fact that McTominay scored a bunch of goals in recent months.
Position, that's not what he's good at, Gav.
No, hang on a second. And I'm not saying it was the right decision. I think, having been around football people for a very long time, and they don't like to admit it, and I'm not saying everyone is like that, they go by gut feel a lot. And they go maybe even a little bit... That's why many of them are superstitious, right? Superstition, gut feel, blah, blah, blah. They have a feeling about somebody. I mean, look, people at Harvard Business School will tell you they're great. You know, managers and CEOs are like this too. But he looks at it and he says, McTominay's gotten us out of so many jams. If he can do it... Again, I don't know, but like...
Listen, you have a
sense about this, right? I'm just wondering, this is what went through his mind.
I don't think. I think he's way stupid. They're pressing a 4-4-2 with McTominay and Højlund. It was one against a team like Bayern who is not really press resistant. Let's be honest. Kimmich doesn't like it. Goretzka doesn't like it. Certainly they don't
They don't like it against Eintracht, this United team. I mean, they're pressing with Antony and Garnacho. No,
but this was one of the worst press that I've seen against Bayern Munich this season. There's Bundesliga mid-table team like Heidenheim press better than what United did on Tuesday night. If you don't want to press, don't go. Don't go and press. Right. Just have a lower block or a medium block. And that's okay. It's fine. Even at home, it's fine. Don't try and have Højlund and McTominay up there when Upamecano, Kim, Masrao. I mean, just it was embarrassing. It was really embarrassing.
I go back to the other thing just on Martial quickly, just because I cannot repeat this enough times. And I've said this about Chelsea. I'll say this about United as well. You cannot play a season when you're playing, especially in United's case, when you're playing European football, unlike Chelsea. You have to have three options at forward, especially in United's case, when one of them is a guy in an aspiring contract with poor fitness who, when he's fit, generally doesn't play well. That's Martial. Sorry. And the other one is a kid who's 20 years old, who has
just arrived,
has 1 year's experience in a top five league. You could say, oh, but Rashford. Okay, leaving aside the fact that then, you know, yeah, clearly had a row with Rashford or whatever. But then Rashford is should be, at the start of the season, we thought was United's best or second best player, right?
Yeah.
The next solution can't be disrupting your best or second best player by moving him to center forward, right? We agree on that.
Yeah.
Right? So how they found themselves in this position continues to me to be a mystery. The lack of a sense that there's a value in having a body, a finisher, somebody you can press and run around. It can be somebody you bring in on loan. It can be Danny Ings. You know?
Yeah.
Just to take the pressure off those games when you're 3-0 up. You take Højlund off, you rest him, those teams where somebody's getting kicked, whatever, right?
It can
be somebody like that. And that, I think, is on Ten Hag. Because Ten Hag, you know, he did the transfers.
Yeah.
Right? There's no hiding this, right? It's not like Murta said, ooh, let me buy Antony, even though Ten Hag doesn't want him. No, because we know you wanted him, you got him, right? That's what's really difficult to deal with. This is a manager who's basically able to sign all the players that he wanted to sign.
Yeah.
He only chose a certain market.
Yeah.
And, you know, just for spits and giggles, the other rumor, a swap, Jadon Sancho for Daniel Malen.
Okay. Ooh.
This seems like another freaking joke to me where he only signs players who he's seen on TV or, you know, well, he watches Champions League finals, right? So he's seen Casemiro, he's seen Onana, obviously.
Or players who are Dutch, yeah.
Or, you know, he watched Chelsea last year, so he gets Mount. And then a bunch of, they tell him Johnny Evans used to play here, all right, you know. And then the rest, everybody else is an Eredivisie alumnus. Everybody.
I refuse to believe that is actually possible to happen.
I'm assuming it would make United better because... I mean, you lose a guy who doesn't play for a guy who at least plays.
Yeah, comes on, like you know, in the second half for Dortmund against PSG on Wednesday night. I don't know. I mean, defensively also, for all the flaws going forward, like you just mentioned rightly, Gabby, they conceded, I think, 14 or 15 goals in this group stage, the more that any English team has ever conceded.
It's 15.
Just, 15 is just an embarrassment, absolutely. Right. And I don't know. He's been a disastrous campaign, for sure. It's not the first time. United, back in 05, 06, under Fergie, they also finished bottom of their group that year. And then not long after, they won the Champions League. So this is not the end. But when you're in this position, you know, when the money of qualifying for the last 16 of your Champions League, for maybe going another round to the quarters, anything like that, even maybe going to the Europa League, would have been welcome at a club that is not as rich as, well, is earning money a lot, but doesn't have the power financially that it used to, maybe.
Well, they made big losses in the last 2 years, yeah, which they'd never done before. And I think the other key difference with 04, 05, you know, back then your competition were Chelsea and Arsenal were starting to fade a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's Liverpool, it's City. I mean, Chelsea aren't good, but they're still there spending a ton of money. Newcastle, we've seen what they did last season. Spurs, Villa are in the top four. I mean, it is a lot tighter that way. There's better resourced opponents. And I don't think you can take for granted that you're going to qualify top four every year.
No.
I think that's a big difference. Final word on Bayern.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you see Tuchel's beard?
Sorry?
Did you see Tuchel's beard?
Yeah.
I mean, he's aged a lot, I won't lie. We're big fans, but I think he's aged a lot in the last few weeks.
I think actually the big change in Tuchel was actually when he went to Paris Saint, when he was at Paris Saint-Germain.
He was still handsome in Paris. He was so glamorous, so elegant.
He looked like a stick figure. He looked like a praying mantis.
The city rubbed on him. It's at Chelsea. At Chelsea, you destroyed him.
At Chelsea, obviously, he had his meltdown, and now this. Yeah, but I'm just wondering. All right, we disagree on whether it was right to play the starters or not. I understand why he did it. I wouldn't have done it. But did you learn anything going into the Stuttgart game?
No, but we were never going to, I think. B team, A team, doesn't matter so much.
So was this some kind of challenge to his players? Or
no, but I think this is a squad, very talented, that right now he's not getting the best at all, far from it. I think they've got a few gears up that they can go to. I think the winter break for them is going to be good, regardless of how they finish just before it against Stuttgart. But I expect them, comes February, March, they might sign a couple of players in January. I think they will. They're in the market for to be better. And I think they will be a big, big threat going forward in this competition. And I think they can win it.
I don't know. Yeah, I just feel.
Well, are you disappointed by what you saw? But not just on Tuesday. Tuesday is.
I didn't learn anything from this game as far as Bayern.
You were never going to.
But that's why, like, I actually wondered whether, what if you gave these other people a bit of a chance? You know, because everybody knows the circumstances. It's just that. Look, well, I think the assessment will be against Stuttgart when they come to town.
Let's see what they get in the
draw as well. Can do against your boy Serhou Guirassy.
Yes, of course.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, Jules, enough United. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
I'm going to guess that it was a rather trying experience, Jules. But in the end, Paris Saint-Germain got the point they needed away to Borussia Dortmund and are through to the round of 16.
They are indeed, Gav. I mean, they didn't really celebrate at the end even. It was a game where they had so many chances. I think their XG is 2.73, something like that, and yet they could only score a goal by a 17-year-old. As good as he is, as talented and promising as Warren Zaïre-Emery is, it's just incredible when you think about it, to miss all those chances. And they also conceded chances, of course, and Dortmund scored one, could have scored more. But for PSG, this is the story of their group stage, really. When you can't take your chances like that, you're not going to top the group. So well done to Dortmund. And I guess well done to PSG still to scrap through, which is nothing glorious at all in a group like this. Because actually, I know you hate when we say a group of death anyway.
No, it's a stupid expression. It's trash.
But neither of the other three teams in the group with PSG, two have been decimated by injuries, Milan and Newcastle. So played their B team, it's a bit.
Right.
But you see what I mean? The other one, Dortmund, is hot and cold all season. And yet, you can only finish second in that group. It's just.
Are you a full crew believer? Because when I saw him in person.
He played really well yesterday.
When I saw him in person, I was like, aha, I understand your purpose.
Yeah,
I understand why you're there.
He played really well, I have to say. Right. I have to say. And Gab, that pomade, what happened in the other game of this group, irrelevant except for Europa League, purposes. Yeah, what happened?
Well, Milan came from behind to win 2-1. Sort of atmosphere you would expect at Newcastle. I thought Newcastle took the lead. I thought they were the better side in the first half. It was interesting. I didn't quite get any. So Anthony Gordon, Dubravka, and Longstaff, they didn't train on Monday.
Yeah.
And Eddie Howe wouldn't say if they were injured, not injured. I was really surprised to see Dubravka and Gordon start. Longstaff came on. I don't know if they're playing with painkillers. I don't know if it was some sort of mind game before that. But look, we said it before, Newcastle are exhausted. It's not just the injuries. It's the fact that the same people play all the time, and so they're tired. They were always going to go down in the game. I think it would have been a really, really big humiliation for Milan if they'd finished bottom of this group.
Yeah.
Given the chances that they squandered in earlier games when, you know, they outplayed Dortmund, they outplayed Newcastle in the first leg. This game could have gone either way. Magic Mike made an incredible save. Pioli, I thought, you know, he got his substitutions right.
Completely.
Or Newcastle are tired late in the game. What do? You send on the speedsters. You know, Chukwueze and Okafor finally fit.
Yeah.
Rafael Leão hit the post. Tomori made an amazing goal line clearance and hit the post.
Yeah.
So all of these things together, you know, fair enough, fine. Milan live to fight another day.
Yeah, for Newcastle, it's disappointing, but, you know.
I think they can focus on top four finish and growth in the league.
Yeah.
Porto versus Shakhtar may not be box office to those of us who are big five fanboy obsessed, Jules, but there was something real at stake. And we saw 8 goals. This was winner take all.
It was really good. Yeah, you're right. They were both on 9 points, so whoever won would finish second of that group behind Barcelona. I mean, you know, Porto, I think they need a big goal screen if they wanted to finish top of the table, and so with Shakhtar, but between them two, and it was a great game. Galeno was outstanding, involved in pretty much, I think, 4 of the 5 goals that Porto scored. Shakhtar gave a really good account of themselves, kept trying, kept attacking. Defensively, they were just not good enough for Taremi, you know, Galeno and everybody else. And well done to Porto. I don't know how far they can go, really. I know we're both big fan of Sergio Conceição, and even one of his sons, Francisco, scored the 5th goal, but they might just not be strong enough to go further.
And
much further.
Just on Shakhtar, let's also remember, for those who have forgotten, because obviously when stuff goes on for a long time, people forget that, you know, Shakhtar are from a town called Donetsk, which right now is in the middle of war. In fact, has been taken over by Russia. Shakhtar Donetsk have to play their home games in Germany. These are the conditions under which they're working.
And they will be in the Europa League as well. And Gabi Naga and Pep, scored to break his own record as the oldest ever Champions League goal scorer. He turns 41 before the end of the season.
I am at a loss for words with this guy, because when you see him play, you realize he hasn't even lost his athleticism. I mean, obviously he's lost his athleticism when he was 25.
He's meant to be less quick.
But he's as athletic as he was when he was 35.
He's so
I don't know how he does it. He has, and he's got that thing where, you know, we saw him as a cartoon villain. Now he grows older. And now we're all kind of cheering for him. So, well done, Pep. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Barcelona had nothing to play for against Antwerp, so Xavi played the B team and ended up on the losing side. Jules, given the defeat to Girona, was it the right decision? Because now he's getting even more stick.
He's getting even more stick. I mean, defensively, it was an atrocious performance. Jules Koundé, but especially Oriol Romeu. I mean, Southampton legend, I give him that. But in this game, against Antwerp, again, no offense to Antwerp, Marc van Bommel, Vermeerin, your favourite young Belgian prodigy, but Romeu was horrendous. He made those big mistakes, one very early on after a minute when Vermeerin scored, and then another one in the second half when Jensen scored. He cost two goals to his team. He was completely useless. I don't know what happened in Xavi's head, considering the defeat against Girona, the situation that he's in, even if they were already qualifying and pretty much certain to finish top of that group, why he did that. Well, we talked about Tuchel.
Yeah. And I'm going to be consistent here. And like, obviously, they should have done better. And obviously, Barcelona's B team should have put on a better showing than
yeah.
this. But you find out what these people are made for, or are made of. You find out when you go and you talk to these people. Guys, you're playing Antwerp. We've lost every game. They'll be highly motivated, but whatever, right? Show me that you need to be in the starting 11.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe he even went to Jules Koundé because his performance of the weekend was a great answer. Show me you need to be in the starting 11, Jules. Of course, he doesn't have other center backs because Inigo Martinez is always injured. And Christensen, of course, came off again. But I think he needs to revise this. You find out what you have in a game that doesn't matter. So I'm going to stick with Xavi.
Yeah, I don't know.
Judge him sure. going forward.
Not too sure. Pep Guardiola also sends out a second string team away at Red Star Belgrade. Except how much did he win? 3-2. And we got to see two very exciting youngsters.
Yeah, Michael Hamilton. His first ever professional game, or first ever senior game. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was tremendous. The way he won the penalty is the kind of thing that you sort of excuse at this. He was fouled, but throwing himself in. You got to learn to make it a bit more believable there, dog. It worked for you this time. Might not work in the future in the Premier League. Oscar Bob, who I've made fun of because he's a silly name. But
lovely goal.
Tremendous goal. I mean, that's highlight reel stuff.
Yeah,
I thought.
Yeah, completely.
That kind of finish. But shout out to Red Star as well. You know, they said they would put on, they would put up a fight. They did. They scored two goals. Super defensive at the beginning. It was obvious what they were going to try to do. But then they got into it. They played a little bit.
We mentioned it a few shows ago, but they finally beat the record of the most home league games without a defeat that Real Madrid owned since the Di Stefano years. Because last week, I think, they won at home. They hadn't played at home for a whole month or something. They won, which now they're unbeaten in 122 league home games.
Right. Oh, it's good. Let's hope Manchester City doesn't join the Serbian league.
Yeah.
Enough dead rubbers, Jules. How about Copenhagen against Galatasaray? A clash for all the marbles.
Incredible park and the atmosphere. And the surprise, really, more than Real Sociedad, more than anyone else in this group stage of the Champions League, Copenhagen, to come out of this group, finish second behind Bayern Munich. They won 1-0. They scored a great team goal. They lost Leraga at the end to a red card. They fought their way to keep the score and qualify for only the second time in their history. The last time it was 2010, 2011 when they went to the last 16.
They're third in the Danish league. And I want to say this, like when people talk about, oh, people only want to see the big teams on television, stuff like that, you can make a lot of money also from stadium atmosphere, from match days, whatever. Yeah. What they put on there at the parking, and I'm just watching on television,
yeah.
That was tremendous.
It was amazing.
I feel a little bit for Maurizio Icardi and the fact that
I know,
but we'll get to see them in the Europa League.
It was the worst game of the season, though, so it was bad. Inter faced Real Sociedad at San Siro with first place in the group at stake. It finished 0-0, which means that Simone Inzaghi's crew are second. Gab, were you a bit surprised that he rested Barella, Lautaro, and Bastoni? I think he's been really disrespectful to this competition, by the way, between you and I, by keeping rotating heavily in Europe every time. And now look, imagine that they play Man City now in the last 16, the tie I want to see, because they finished second of their group. They can only have themselves to blame for.
So he rotated heavily. This is what he does. He views the game differently. He says, you know, Lautaro and Barella, it's not like they didn't play in this game. They came on.
His plan
was to keep the game close and then send these dudes on to go and score the winner. It didn't work out. You know why it didn't work out? That's something that they've been a much better team in this competition.
Yeah.
Even when they played them in the other leg,
Inter got
the draw. They didn't really deserve that. So look, Real Sociedad are better in the Champions League. But we'll see. He's got stuff up his sleeve. He genuinely believes in this rotation. I got no issue with it. Real Madrid traveled to face Union Berlin, and in contrast, Carlo Ancelotti played many of his regulars and gave Luka Modric 90 minutes.
Yeah.
They won 3-2 because, well, it's Union. Sorry, producer Freddy. But was that a surprise?
Surprise that he played
Luka Modric for 90 minutes.
Maybe.
And Rodrigo.
Modric was not happy.
What's the point
weekend?
Of starting Rodrigo in this game? Why not play some guy from Real Madrid B nobody's ever heard of?
I know, you're right. Maybe it's just to keep that rhythm. Rodrigo was on good form. He was on good form again. On Tuesday night, so maybe that was the reasoning. They scored 4 goals. I thought looked good. Joselu scored 2, which would be very good for his confidence. Maybe, although they almost drew that game somehow, because I think Union had like 2 shots at some point. But it's a win. They go 18 out of 18.
What about Volland again?
I know, incredible.
You know what? I think he did this because, and I haven't spoken to him, and please take this for what it's worth, but this now gives him an excuse to drop Modric at the weekend and be like, Luka, you played 70 minutes on Sunday and 90 minutes here. Oh, sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, first place was at stake as well when Atletico Madrid faced Lazio. It wasn't much of a contest, though.
No, Lazio are not good right now. They're just not good. Sarri can mumble all he wants. Atletico Madrid are really good. They have better quality up and down the side.
Yeah, Griezmann
again. I think, you know, there was a Zaccagni run and shot, which looked pretty good. But other than that, Atletico could have scored more in this one. I think Sarri's got a lot of things he needs to think about. Lons against Sevilla was only for a Europa League spot, but Jules, this was a proper game.
It was amazing.
And what happened to those traveling Sevilla fans?
So they got in the end. Remember we told you the story on Monday?
Were there new buddies from Lons?
No, well, yes and no, because then the highest court in France just cancelled.
Oh, they overturned the ban.
Yeah, overturned the ban
from
the government.
But they still fraternized and drank beer. And,
yeah, it was all good.
Was it Moules and Frites that they ate? Because they're basically Belgian, right?
They eat those baguette sandwich with burgers and chips in the baguette.
Which is just kind of gross if you're Parisian.
Well, I mean, it's really heavy as well when you eat it. But it was a great game. To be fair, Sevilla played well, especially in the first half. I think the pressure got to Lens, who were not good, but they managed to get a bit of a lucky pen. They scored there. Then even when Sevilla scored, Sergio Ramos, his 17th goal in the Champions League in his career.
After missing the penalty.
After having a retake. But then right at the end, Lens found a winner. They exploded. The whole stadium erupted. It's great. They will be in the Europa League and they deserve it. I'm so happy for them.
All right. Joseph, if you're listening, can we come to Lens and eat those heavy sandwiches with you?
We go for the playoff.
For the playoff. Europa. Yeah, please.
We go. Gab, horrific scenes though in Turkey where Faruk Koca, the president of Ankara Gucu, ran onto the pitch after the end of their game at the weekend and attacked referee Halil Umut Meler after his team considered an injury time equalizer to Kayko Rizespor. I mean, it was really terrible to see.
This is terrible. For those who don't know, Halil Umut Meler is an international referee.
Yeah.
He refereed the Conference League last year. He did a group game, I think, involving Celtic this year as well. This guy, Faruk Koca, he's not some, you know, local wastrel. He's a guy. He served 2 terms in parliament.
Yeah.
And what I find, and to the Turkish authorities' credit, he was arrested along with 2 other people. If you see the video, and the video is a tough watch because not only does the guy get punched in the face, Umut Meler, but as he's lying on the ground, he's surrounded by people. He gets kicked in the head.
Yeah, by other members of staff.
Well.
Yeah, the
You're going to kick somebody in the head
players.
While they're down?
I know.
I'm sorry. Like, there's got to be... They've been arrested. Hopefully, they throw the book at them. There's also a suggestion he's been thrown out of his political party as well. What empowers somebody to do this in this super cowardly way?
Yeah.
Because you know what? I'm going to guess Uwe Miller is about 20 years younger. If you were a man, Coach, this is how you resolve your stuff. Why don't you go and meet Uwe Miller in an alleyway, right? If this is how you want to be a man, not surrounded by your goons and beat somebody up. This was absolutely horrendous. You know what made it even worse? What makes me even... I'm going to quote. This is from Turkish media. I got this off the BBC website. Quote. From coaches, supposedly. This incident developed due to the wrong decisions and provocative behavior of the referee. My aim was to react verbally to the referee and then spit in his face.
I mean, even that. So the justification is unreal. The spitting in the face.
We're just at a loss. Jules, we left it very late to talk Arsenal and PSV Eindhoven because there was nothing at stake and they both go through. Do you have anything to say? And if not, I will ask you, do we need to stop making fun of Peter Bosz?
Yeah, we've stopped already because of his incredible record in the league to start with, 15 wins out of 15 games.
That's insane.
Insane. They played well against Arsenal, like a B Arsenal team. When PSV went pretty much, apart from Bad De Jong, replaced by Ricardo Pepi, who I thought had a good game, like Malik Tillman. Malik Tillman was very impressive, I thought, in that game. PSV played really well. They've got so much going for them. I would not want to face them in the last 16, although I think they could be quite exposed because of the attacking style and
because of Peter Bosz
the Bosz ball and the Bosz madness at time. But that was a good result for them, and that was a very good campaign for them. So,
by the way, when we say Arsenal B team, just to be clear, it's not like Guarneri and those other no names are playing.
No, but it was like players who don't play much,
like Kai Havertz, Jorginho.
Wait, Kivior.
Wait, no, but I was actually a little bit surprised that. Obviously, the front three was a second-choice front three, and you had Kivior in there. But,
and Ramsdale.
You still had Gabriel and Saliba.
Yeah, that's true.
And nice to see that. Yeah. Yeah, nice to see get an Aaron Ramsdale
sounding. I know, exactly. Napoli beat Braga 2-0 to secure second place, which we expected. But how about Victor Osimhen's back heel? Although he gets a bit lucky.
Oh, he gets some, that's why I mentioned he gets so lucky. Talk about two weirdo goals to give up if you're Braga. The first one, the own goal. And again, go check this out on YouTube. And then the Osimhen one, he would have scored anyway.
Yeah.
But he clearly mishits it. He just kind of watches the ball and roll sideways into the net. But I enjoyed this. I thought Kvaratskhelia had a good game. Meret making a tremendous save from my boy Ricardo Horta. I told you Braga were good.
Yeah,
I told you Braga were good. I told you they'd finish ahead of Union, which, hey, I mean, self-fulfilling prophecy. Benfica lost their first four games, three of them without even scoring a goal. But they went away to Salzburg and they won 3-1, which is what they needed to do to get into the Europa League.
Incredible.
And by the way, the reason we mentioned it, I know, obviously there's a ton of Benfica fans out there. I don't know if there's any Salzburg fans at all, except for in the Red Bull boardroom. But this was really exciting, really dramatic. And Cabral, of all people, former Europa Conference League top scorer.
Of course.
Former man sitting behind Jovic on the Fiorentina bench. He gets the crucial goal in injury time.
And talking about back heels for Osimhen, this one is a real beauty if you haven't seen it. On the turn as well to finish it in the 92nd minute. Benfica needed to win by two, a two-goal margin.
Because they lost 2-0 at home.
Exactly. And they did. It's just incredible. Really, Di Maria had a great game, scored a goal Olympico, a direct corner.
I forgot about that too.
Yeah, it was involving the Rafa Silva, who could have had a hat-trick. Rafa Silva kept missing chances, and Benfica deserved it, really. But when Salzburg came back to 2-1, we thought, wow, okay, they might just get that third place and Benfica will be out of Europe altogether. But in the end, Benfica will be in the Europa League. So even if that came really late and it's a bit of a miracle, well done to Roger Schmidt and all the players. And not much at stake, on the other hand, for Leipzig against Young Boys, Gab. But still, they win 2-1 and Emil Forsberg scores before saying goodbye. Arvidsson.
Yeah, bye-bye, club legend Emil Forsberg. You know, when your history stretches all the way back to, 2014, then it doesn't take that much to be a club legend. But, heck of a player. Yusuf Poulsen might still dispute that club legend task. But Sesko scored a great goal.
I was curious
because I haven't, he hasn't been playing that much this season. Obviously, he's got a lot of competition up front.
Yeah.
But and he's funny because he's a gifted player, but he's one of those really tall guys who looks like a really tall guy on the ball, but still he's good. So I enjoy a little highlight.
I see what you mean.
Jules Arne Slot, as you know, is my current favorite bald Dutch manager. There was nothing but pride at stake for his Feyenoord team away to Celtic, and they lose 2-1. Arne Slot, by the way, who looks a lot like our producer Freddie. Yeah. Now that producer Freddie cut his hair really, really
Freddie's
short.
More handsome, though.
Yeah, Freddie is more handsome. He's also about 20 years younger. can they do something in the Europa League, Feyenoord?
I think so. I mean, they lost in the last minute. Like we said again, they were already, obviously, they had nothing to play for.
Yeah, we don't want to minimize Celtic's great achievement because, by the way, those guys get really aggressive.
First win at home in the Champions League in 10 years. They were on that incredible. They hadn't won at home in the Champions League for the last 15 games before Wednesday night. They were on one of the worst home run, winless home run in the Champions League. Lille were above them and then another team.
Can I say something about these home runs, away run records, stuff like that?
Yeah.
I think it's all guff.
Why?
Because you mentioned earlier about United's run and how they were fortress Old Trafford. Now they're terrible at home. Celtic, you would assume. It's like, why should Celtic be bad at home in the Champions League when, you know, you got passionate fans, you have an incredible stadium. It's usually cold when you go there, so it's an adjustment. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It's just a little stat. I don't think there's any significance whatsoever.
It is. I can't believe you're saying that.
Well, you're saying Celtic fans suddenly became lame for 10 years?
But it's nothing to do with the fans. It's just that this was the run that they were on. They just could not win at home despite the great support, the cold, whatever, Celtic Park, whatever you want to say. Welcome to paradise. But it just happened. And for Feyenoord, just to finish, yes, I think they could be very interesting in the Europa League. They've done really well in the Conference League and the Europa League in the last two seasons before. They play great. They've got Santi Jimenez. I don't know for how long, but right now, when the draw will be made, it will still be there. So they're good.
Should we start a rumor linking Santi Jimenez to a big Premier League club in the northwest of England that needs a centre forward?
Yeah, like who play in red?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I think that'd be great. Bookings for Descent in the Premier League, Gab, are up from 24 last year to 80 already at this stage of the season. Are you surprised?
I am not surprised because, you know what, Howard Webb, I remember this like it was yesterday, right? He came out and he said, look, we really want to stamp down on this and surrounding the referee and all this stuff. Descent, we're going to start showing cards. And people said, oh, yeah, we've heard this before from referees, like, you know, with the tighter VAR interpretation a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
They said, we're going to stamp this out. And in a couple of weeks, and pundits get grumpy on television, managers complain, and then you go back and you... No. They've done this. They've stuck with it. And I predict that now the rate of cards for dissent is going to start going down because people understand there's VAR, right?
Yeah.
So you're not going to convince the referee to change his decision because there's a man in a booth most of the time and the referee knows about as much as you do about it.
Yeah.
And you will get booked for it. And the bookings pile up. And then people get suspended, whether it's Rodri or Nico Jackson, and it's 27 yellows, all of them for dissent. No, it's not really 27, but it's a lot. So I think this is a learning curve, and I think this is among the many issues that they've had this season. This is something I think that they've done well.
I agree.
Victor Osimhen is named Africa Footballer of the Year, beating out Ashraf Hakimi and Mohamed Salah. Jules, you love your awards. Does this make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Well done to him. I mean, he meant a lot. He went all the way to Marrakesh to receive the trophy. Lovely
suit. It's not that far from Naples. It's just a little jaunt across the man.
The night before a Champions League match, by the way. But it meant a lot to him. I think winning it probably and you know, feeling like you're the best player in your continent. Also, the fact that you beat Mo Salah, who's obviously an African legend too, who's won it many times.
How did Hakimi finish ahead of Salah?
The World Cup, you know.
Yeah, I know. But if I was to ask you who was the outstanding player at the World Cup from Hakimi's team, you might mention the goalkeeper, you might mention Amrabat.
Yeah,
Hakimi, he's injured. He's in his out.
Hakimi appeared still. And sticking with Osimhen, Gabby, Fabrizio Romano and others are reporting that which is Osimhen and Napoli, have finally agreed a new contract.
Yeah, agreed, not signed. I think it's a kind of contract that says, hey, let's go and talk more. Because it's a one-year extension. I'm sure he got a bump in salary. And he got his clause in there, which is 130 million euros, which is a lot of money. This is what Napoli wanted.
Yeah.
there's always give and takes, right? There's elements in a contractual negotiation. One is length of contract, one is the release clause, and one is the wages. So looking at this, this suggests to me that he got a little bit more money, but not that much more money. He got a win on the extension to making it just 1 year, which means they can have this conversation again in 12 months' time.
Yeah.
And the clause is just in case, you know, all of a sudden United get desperate or somebody else and say, oh, like, and so this way De Laurentiis doesn't lose out and Osimhen doesn't lose out.
Yeah.
Asisat Oshoala, who plays for Barcelona and Nigeria. So it's a Super Eagles double.
It is.
Actually, are the women's team also the Eagles?
No,
Falcons?
Yeah, we said different it last bird? Time. Yeah, it's a different bird.
Okay, anyway, it's a big success for Nigerian football.
Yeah.
She won the Africa Women's Footballer of the Year, beating out South African Tembi Katlana and Zambia's Barbara Banda. This is less of a surprise because this is actually the sixth time she's won the award, and she's still just 29 years old.
Yeah.
If she wins a few more, maybe just name it after her. Maybe, do you think if she keeps winning and like she ends up passing Messi and Cristiano, or Cristiano especially, he's going to keep playing until he can win more.
Maybe as many or more than Oshala. I don't know. The Super Falcons, by the way, are the Nigeria women's team. Well done to her. I mean, again, Nigeria, where I don't know if we can call them a surprise at the Women's World Cup, but obviously they did extremely well, and so did she, along with the goalkeeper. So I think she deserves completely this award. She's been great with Barcelona too, even if she's maybe not always starting. It's a very competitive squad over there, but wonderful talent. And she was you could see on the video, on the coverage, she was just so excited that her and Osimhen won it. She was like, oh, Victor, my boy, go and receive your try. It was brilliant. It was beautiful to watch.
All right. By the way, Nigerian fans out there, I know we have a bit of a following in West Africa. I am genuinely curious why the men are Eagles and the women are Falcons, because Super Eagles and Super Falcons, right? Because there are, I know for a fact, that, I mean, I wasn't great in biology, but there are female Eagles, right?
Yeah.
And there are male Falcons.
I suspect.
Now, being an NFL fan, I always felt that, you know, perhaps Eagles are generally more masculine and Falcons, like especially the ones in Atlanta, are more feminine. But I don't quite follow that. I'm sure there's a good story behind it.
There must be, yeah.
And so please let us know. Hit us up on social media.
Premier League referee boss Howard Webb went on television to explain the Simon Hooper blooper, the decision when he didn't play advantage late in that Man City Spurs 3-3 draw, remember, and Jack Grealish with three on goal. Gab, what did he say?
So he said what we all speculated went through Hooper's head at the time. It was a tough tackle on Haaland, but because he's a Viking warrior, he popped straight back up and hit the ball. From where he was, he went to blow instinctively. He didn't realize that he thought Haaland had just kicked the ball away, and he didn't realize that Grealish was going to get there. It is a really bad mistake. He feels really bad. So Webb kind of repeated really the only possible explanation for this. But you know what? I'm glad he did. I'm glad there's somebody accountable going in front of the cameras, even if you're just
saying that's the third time or fourth time. There's still
it's not good.
Bad mistakes happening.
Yeah, but it's not the third or fourth time with Simon Hooper, is it?
Yeah, but it was even worse.
All right, Jules, since you've been good and you love awards,
yeah,
let's talk FIFA's The Best Award.
The Best.
Which I could care less about. But I'm guessing they're releasing the nominees like category by category, because obviously they don't have the best men's player or best women's player, but we do have the shortlisted for goalkeepers and coaches.
That's right. So coaches, it would be one of Pep Guardiola, Luciano Spalletti, or Simone Inzaghi.
Gee, I wonder who's going to win that one. Maybe the person who won six of six trophies.
Yeah, exactly. For the women side of the game, Wiegmann, Giraldez, and Emma Hayes are the three.
Wait, not the manager who won the World Cup?
No, he's not on that list. I wonder why. For the goalkeeper, we've got Bruno.
Who would you pick in the women's game?
So I would pick Pep and Emma Hayes, the two managers.
Didn't Chelsea lose in the Champions League? But they're still in.
Yeah,
the
I mean,
stage. Okay. All right,
the thing about Giraldez and Barca, they're just so good.
Right.
That I just think that before Emma Hayes leaves the domestic club industry or circuit, if you want, before going for the women national team in the US, I think she deserves recognition for everything that she's done And I know the Champions League obviously went to Barcelona.
And you don't go with Serena Wiegmann because she's the Dutch girl.
She's the Dutch girl. And England lost the final against Spain in the World Cup. So I've got a soft spot for Emma Hayes. That's why. Who would you go for then?
I don't watch the women's game as closely as you do. I think, from what I understand, both Emma Hayes and Giraldez both have really well-resourced teams.
Yeah.
Emma Hayes probably faces more competition in her domestic league, so maybe I might go with Emma Hayes.
Okay. And for the goalkeepers, we've got Bruno Courtois-Ederson for the men, Mackenzie Arnold, Catalina Kohl, and Mary Earps for the women. I think it's for the men.
For the men, I'll make this very simple. For me, I think Courtois
is the best goalkeeper in the world, right?
Right. He's also been injured for half the season, but I don't think Ederson had a great year last year. I think he's had a better year this year. But again, how do you judge these guys who only face shots once in a while?
True. But he did win the treble.
I think I would go with Bruno because of the run and because of the Europa League and whatever else, even though he's kind of disappeared since then. But yeah, it'll be an interesting one.
It'll be interesting. This one, I think, is the most kind of even where
most
you can have an argument. Yeah, contested, sorry. Where you can have an argument for each three of them. And on the women's side, I think Mary Herbst had a really good season, of course, especially with England.
But she swore in a game, so that should disqualify.
I know, whether you like that or not, the swearing. I think Catalina Kohl for the whole story of her and the Spanish national team, her getting into the team, starting, winning the World Cup. It's just incredible. So for me, she would be my pick.
And we're not going to go with Mackenzie Arnold because it's weird and unnatural when your first name is a last name and your last name is a first name, right?
And she beat the French, so she can't.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, Mackenzie.
Come on, my vote. The Premier League has passed a new law, Gabby, which says that teams can only amortize contract over 5 years. You love talking about this. So no more 8-year contract for Mudrik. That's kind of stuff. That's what I mean. You can only have a 5-year deal.
You can sign him to an 8-year deal.
Okay.
But you can only amortize, which is where you basically get the cost of the transfer fee, essentially, and the salary. You have to do that over 5 years, essentially. They're taking their lead from UEFA. This is to do with financial fair play or financial stability rules, as they're now done. This was a workaround, and now that loophole is closed. We knew this was going to happen. It just seems reasonable.
Yeah.
You'd have the same rules with UEFA's financial stability rules that you do in the Premier League. Will Steele, the ginger wonder, he was strongly linked to Sunderland and their wacky owner. But he's not going to go, is he?
No, he's not going to go. I don't think so. Interestingly enough, though, he met with Sunderland. It was even his agent who made the first contact. Clearly, I think Will Steele.
He met with Kirill?
With Kirill Rudreffers, of course, the owner of Sunderland, who is the son of Margarita and Robert.
And he's the nephew of Julia Louis Dreyfus from Seinfeld as well, no?
I don't think so. But
and
maybe.
Veep as well.
I'm not too familiar with her. And I find it interesting that Will Steele kind of put himself forward for this job, for the Sunderland job, in the Championship, doing well in the Championship, but still. He's doing a great job, of course, at Reims. He's a bit dreading the fact that they're going to lose key players with AFCON and the Asia Cup. And I think he's thinking, now my reputation is really high because Reims, who are 8th in Ligue 1, so he's doing really well. If by the end of the season, especially after the AFCON and Asian Cup, we fall to 12th because we've lost 5 in a row because of the players missing, then my reputation might not be as good. I don't know. It's interesting, but I don't think Sunderland could have paid off Reims for him anyway. There would have been a small fee. And Reims, I don't think, would have been very happy. And Will Steele, kind of, he's still enjoying Ligue 1 right now. It's a good league for him to keep learning. Let's not forget, he's only 32 years old. But I thought that was a really interesting, little story.
So I have zero idea about the Championship, but I'm familiar with Sunderland. They tell me that Ipswich are doing rather well.
Yes.
Is it possible Ipswich and Sunderland will be back in the Premier League?
I think it is possible.
And then they'll replace some of these off-brand Fugazi sides, and we have two proper historical top-flight teams back in the top flight.
Some fans from Sheffield United, Burnley are not going to be happy with you, and Luton.
I'm not talking about Burnley.
Okay. FIFA revealed that in 2023, clubs have paid $888.1 million. That's $888.1 million in agent fees.
Yeah, so obviously this is a big number, but if I told you they paid $8 billion in agent fees or $80 million, you'd say, oh, that's a big number, right?
Yeah.
Significant here is they're up 42.5%. And this is at a time when actually, if you exclude Saudi Arabia,
yeah,
spending was flat or even down a little bit. So this tells me that of that, if they've gone up 42.5%, a huge chunk of those fees were paid by the public investment fund of Saudi Arabia, yeah, to agents. The reason, like, these numbers go out, people talk about, oh, look, money going out of the game, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you know, this is terrible. And FIFA says, ah, see, we need to regulate this and cap agent fees. You know my views on this. I think they should regulate it. They should regulate it with a lot more transparency, not necessarily capping. If somebody wants to go and pay George Mendes $75 million for a free transfer, that's their choice.
Yeah.
But the fans should know what their club is spending money on so that they can hold people accountable.
That's right.
Moises Caicedo has told Telemundo that Chelsea fans haven't seen the real Caicedo. They haven't seen the real Romeo Lavia either, because the poor fellow has been injured all year. But that he's grateful to Mauricio Pochettino for protecting him. Jules, accountability, my word of the day. This is accountability from Caicedo.
We would have destroyed him if he had said, I've been great. I played my best football at Chelsea. Look how well am I doing.
No, but for somebody to say, look.
What, to say the truth, we're applauding now?
Well, how often we would have said, oh, the difficult season.
Yeah,
exactly.
True. You could have done an Erik ten Hag and said, I'm great. I'm amazing. Yes, okay, good for him.
So I guess Pochettino are protecting him by not coming out and saying, damn, Caicedo had another rubbish game.
I don't know, maybe they're very close at training, you know, during the week.
Yeah.
Because during the games, I'm not sure how much Poch is protecting him, considering that he's leaving him all exposed. There's no structure to this Chelsea team, as we've said before. But I just want to see Caicedo his best. We always want to see
we can debate the best. Whether he was worth all the money they paid for him, there's no question that he played at a really high level. Just no question he's still very, very young.
Exactly.
In a position where players often blossom when they're a little older.
Yeah, he just needs a bit of structure around him, I think. Yeah, and Gab, this went back to Monday night, but you wanted to talk about the Cagliari-Sassuolo game.
Yes, obviously it's not a high-profile game. But again, if you like to kill time on YouTube, go and check this out, because this is pretty remarkable, right? So Kamaldeen Sulemana, early in the game,
yeah,
he elbows Sassuolo's Christian Torsved in the mouth, right?
Yeah. Torsved, on purpose or not on purpose?
Like I think it was accidental.
Okay.
But Sulemana's a strong dude, and he absolutely nails him. I mean, like, the guy lost two teeth. There's, like, blood gushing out of his mouth. Christian Torsved, by the way, fun fact, his dad is Erik Torsved, former Tottenham goalkeeper.
Oh, okay.
And I am imagining little Christian becoming a professional footballer because he got to practice in the back garden against his dad, who's a professional goalkeeper.
Amazing.
Right? That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Torsved, being a Viking, ends
stays
up playing.
On.
Yeah,
oh,
stays on.
Boy.
No problem there. It's like, you know, it's just, it's only his mouth and blood keeps coming out. So Sassuolo take the lead. And then in injury time, they concede the equalizer, the fourth minute of injury time, and in the sixth minute of injury time, it's that man, Pavoletti, the man who seemingly only scores in injury time,
yeah,
with a dramatic overhead kick for the winner, for Cagliari, for Claudio Ranieri. For Jakub Janto, by the way, Sid Lowe went and interviewed him. I'm going to plug it. You should go check it out. I spent a lot of time with him. There's good video of it,
yeah,
as well, kind of explaining, you know, the highest profile footballer to come out as gay by far. And who's not just a, you know, publicity-seeking dork, like somebody I could mention. Whatever. Nice, heartwarming story. Jules, mark your calendar. We said it would happen because there are tickets to be sold and attention to be drawn. And I think we like to see this. February 1st, Cristiano against Messi again. And like all major sporting exhibitions, I actually haven't checked. So if I'm wrong, tell me. I'm assuming it's going to be in Saudi Arabia.
I think so. I think so, Gabby. Al Nassr against Inter Miami, of course. I don't know in what kind of physical state Messi would be. Obviously, it would be there.
remember what physical state these guys. The season's over.
They'll be like in preseason.
He's got 3 months to rest.
Well, yeah, but they would be.
It's MLS preseason. Also, what preseason is Messi?
They would be traveling.
The guy walks around the pitch.
Aren't they traveling to Hong Kong and Guatemala and wherever I know, Saudi Arabia, all of that, to play friendly exhibition like it was Pelé and Santos back in the old days, just to showcase Messi all around the world. I mean, wow.
How awesome would it be if Luis Suarez was there too?
He goes
and he bites Cristiano.
Oh my God, imagine. I'll be watching on February 1st.
All right. So will
I'm sure you will be.
I'm buying the pay-per-view,
when
man.
When the last time Cristiano and Messi played against each other?
I don't know. Answers on a postcard.
That would be a while ago. Giorgio Chiellini has retired from football, Gab. It's a sad day. We touched upon this on Monday, of course, after the MLS Cup. But now you've written about him, so plug your piece, as you often do.
Exactly. It's called Synergy. No, I was just struck by one thing about Chiellini. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you're right, interesting things. I've had two things about Chiellini. One is the fact that he's supposed to be a villain, right? People know Italian football is so polarized between Juve fans and people who are anti-Juventus, right? So the dude was there for 18 years. He's the guy who generally beat up your center forward, beat up in a sporting way. So you're supposed to absolutely hate him, right? And yet, it's hard to hate him because he has the goofy smile and the big nose and so on. And that was something that I thought really weirdly endearing about him. And off the pitch, of course, he is a good guy. The other thing, he said something really, really simple. People talked, he was on, just last night, he was on television on Sky Italia with Billy Costacurta and stuff like that. And they asked him, well, you know, you played until you were really old. And, you know, you were known for your ability to kind of anticipate. I don't know, how did you keep playing when you got older and slower and you had your injuries? And he said, film study. He said, every player that I played against, every player's got tendencies, right?
Yeah.
You play the percentages, they're more likely to go one way or the other one. This is their foot. They make this kind of run. And he made it seem so freaking simple. And then I realized it applies to every sport. And I actually think every time I watch a game, and you must have, we've talked about this before, right? You know this guy's going to favor one foot. You know this guy's going to shift his body this way, right?
Yeah.
Why isn't there more film study?
I don't know. That's a good question.
There should be.
By the way, Messi and Cristiano faced in January when PSG played that all-star Saudi team. Do you remember? I mean, I'd forgotten about that game.
So. Well, there you go. This one will be far more memorable.
This is a real game. This is not like an all-star game. This is real.
It's real friendly. Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday and do this all over again.
Yes.
Because the mighty Liverpool, who are top of the league, host Manchester United and a bunch of other games as well. So until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.